final hour here on this Thursday afternoon. What a gorgeous day here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here at First Horizon Park. Sounds tonight, first pitch, 6:35. Let's head over to West End. Let's bring in Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee, who is on the line with us. Coach, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Doing fantastic. Did you recently throw out a first pitch at one of the baseball games? Was it the Florida series, or what game was it?
No, the Tennessee series. I was out there, and I'm proud to say that I got it over the plate. It was a little high, but the catcher framed it into the strike zone, so I think we got a strike.
All right. Well, that was my follow-up. So you hummed a strike in there. So were you at least sitting with Bill Belichick during the Florida series?
No. And by the way, hummed the strike in there. I think the gun, I was given feedback later on, I think it was 53 miles an hour. So I've got some work to do on my velocity. But really, in the moment, I was just thinking about, like, let me not, fall on my face off the mound.
Oh, Willie and I have been there.
Concern.
We're with
you. A lot of pressure.
Were you nervous?
You know, it's like when you hold that ball, you feel like the judgment of everyone in the world is going to be, you know, upon you. And yet,
yep,
it's just throwing the baseball. And so I wasn't nervous, but I realized that, you know, like the opportunities for it to go really bad were there. And, you know, you just embrace it, you step into it, you let it rip.
I will tell you, last August, we were here. It was ESPN 102.5, the game night, here celebrating our 10-year anniversary. And I had our 10-year-old baseball team here. Actually, it would have been our 9-year-old baseball team here last year. And let me tell you, Clark, there was a lot of pressure. I had the privilege and the honor to throw out the first pitch here where we are. And with all that being said, I'm like, man, if I throw a three-hopper, like, they'll never listen to another word I say. Like, there was a pressure to, like, not embarrass myself because, you know, as the coach, like, you're like, I'll lose the team if I embarrass myself doing this.
That's right. It's amazing. You start to throwing out the first pitch clues you into mental performance and all the all the layers that exist. But I think this will one up you just a little bit. So last spring, I threw out the first pitch for the Alabama series, and now it wasn't, obviously my team is there. They're in the stands, so there's that pressure. But you know, here at Vanderbilt, we do like a, you know, there's a first pitch that deals with like a program supporter, so someone who's, you know, who does a lot for the program, and they throw out one, and then there's like the ceremonious first pitch, which would be then me walking out. And so the person before me throwing out the sponsored first pitch was a 9-year-old baseball player, and he proceeded to walk. And so in my mind, this was a year ago, this is my first time ever doing this, I'm thinking, like, you know, look, 5 feet in front of the rubber, you know, let's get on flat ground or as flat as we can. He goes up to the rubber and he hums a strike. So
nice.
I knew at that moment that if I did not step up, that my tenure here was going to be short. Luckily, I was able to fight through it.
Oh, that's a good story. That's a really good story. Yeah. So, other than a tie, which I don't believe in, how did you feel about the spring game?
it was good. I think we made progress. I think it was competitive. There was back and forth. You're always looking for the signs and symptoms, right? And I think a year ago we went to the spring game and we had a side of the ball not show up. I mean, it was, I think there were 70 points scored on, over 70 points on offense. And the reality is through the spring, we'd had trouble moving the ball a year ago. And so it kind of was the first glimpse of, like, you know, where we were from a performance mindset standpoint and a competitive mindset standpoint and how we viewed, again, like competitive performance. So that was kind of the first time that, you know, the personality of the team revealed itself to then be revealed again in the East Tennessee State game, which at 7-3 in the second quarter, it felt like there was a stranglehold on our sideline. And so what I wanted to see this year was just First of all, I wanted it to be a celebration. It's the culmination of a lot of work. I wanted them to be excited to do it in our stadium and to come out and throw some punches, figurative punches, back and forth. And they did it. It was fun. I thought the offense had success, a little defense counterpunched. It was physical. On the whole, we made it out healthy. And look, you may not like the tie, but for me, it was everybody wins. but it was, you know, we felt good coming out of it. I think we had a good spring where, you know, progress was visible for us. You know, we're talking about, you know, how we play with total effort, how we play within structure, how we own the operation on offense, and just being faster and being stronger, being more violent at the point of attack. Those things showed up. Now we gotta compound that over the next, you know, 4 months, and, you know, playing week zero, you know, sometimes in those early games, it's not about the more talented team, it's about the team that's ready to play. And so we have to make sure that we kind of stay on our toes here and launch into the next phase.
Coach Clark Lee is with us, and of course, he's referring to week zero, the trip to Hawaii. Now, Coach, I know that the baseball team just went out there and played Hawaii at the start of their season. So what kind of scouting report did you get from the island there?
Well, I got they were sending some pictures back. I guess, you know, the football team's now playing in a stadium on campus. So I was shown some of the grounds, and you know, we're going to go out the Sunday before. So we're going to spend a week there. You know, part of that's to adjust. Another part of that's just the bond. You know, I want to have the opportunity for this team to spend time together and really to train into them what it feels like to go to a bowl game, you know, like what it feels like to have that opportunity to travel together and have families around and do some community service projects while we're there and practice, you know, at a high school and just to be ready, honestly, to be ready for when the ball's put down so that we can get after it. But it'll be a fun time and a fun trip. And obviously we're going to be anxious to get to the Saturday and get to rolling against Hawaii.
That's going to be fun. Clark, I want to ask you, you guys just recently came out with sort of how you're going to approach it. I think there's going to be, we were talking to Kansas Lee yesterday about some details that will probably be forthcoming, but the partnership you've made in terms of the NIL, it seems like it's moving very, very fast, and every school wants to be in the game in the right way. So give us your philosophy and outlook on where you stand on this and how you can use it to your benefit.
Well, I'm proud of the partnership. I think it's a great step for us, and I compliment Candace and Chancellor Dearmeyer and all the effort that went into that. You know, I think that's a starting point for us. You know, we understand the landscape of college football, and honestly, I'm excited to you know, really like nail down our NIL footprint, and it can be significant. We're here in Nashville. We have a lot of opportunities that are around us. We also, you know, have team members here that are exactly what businesses and companies would want representing their brand. And so we're very proud of our student athletes. I'm certainly very proud of our football players. And I'm excited to just continue to build out this NIL package and really kind of work to claim some territory here in the market. And we don't have to be, you know, because what we offer here is so valuable from the standpoint of the education and you know, the network that being a part of Vanderbilt comes with, like we're offering something that will allow for our student athletes to be competitive for the rest of their lives. And that's a hell of a statement. I mean, you know, we don't just compete for the time that we're in uniform. I mean, anyone who's on a path to success realizes that, you know, beyond if you play a 10-year NFL career and you're at 31, you're not interested in just living off your money and living in the glory days of past. You know, you want to be equipped to launch into your impact in life. And so at Vanderbilt, our guys will be competitive for the rest of their life. They're training all the skills here on this campus they need to ensure that their future families see them, you know, working every day and working to impact communities and making a difference in our world. And yet we also understand that the current landscape allows for opportunity to earn while you're playing, and that is fantastic. And we just want to put the full force of Vanderbilt behind that and give our guys the best possible opportunities.
I think that's a great way to put it. And I'm trying to think back. If I were that age, would I be able to grasp that part of it? I hope that I would. But, Clark, of course, the headlines always with this is like, how quickly can you, can some of these athletes get some money right away? And that is something that's available to them now. But being able to see that big picture that you're talking about and are going to emphasize, how easy do you think that, that people you're recruiting can absorb that part of it?
Well, look, there are going to be people that are in lockstep with that. Some people are going to need to take time with it. We're really going to need to be intentional with our messaging. And some people are looking for the fastest possible option. And in the end, what we haven't plotted out here is the total impact of this. So we're going to learn a lot about what some of these things that we read about, the impact that has on performance, the impact that has on psychology. Again, you're talking about young people who have risen to levels of impact and are on big stages, and yet they're still in a developmental stage. And so, there's an element of this where there's, to think about all the things that I was dealing with as I was trying to find my identity on the football field, and then also build, not as a separate identity from myself as a person. And you think about all that we've had in a struggle between, connecting with a life beyond the field for athletes. We're creating an environment right now where validation happens way earlier. And I bring that up just to say, I think we're going to see over the next few years really the total impact of all of this. Obviously, there are going to be some great success stories where you have guys that come in and they earn a lot of money and they have great success on the field and they open up NFL future for themselves and then they have a long and happy life. And then you're going to have situations where, the promise of money early becomes, an uphill climb in performance, becomes the disappointment of losing something that you never had. And I think there's a balance in there somewhere. And I think the adults in the room have to keep a perspective on it and have to make sure that, again, in recruiting and then also in the way that we're messaging our rosters, that we're taking time to paint the 40-year picture and not just kind of the glitz and the glamour that could await you here in 4 years.
Coach, we appreciate it as always. Now you get to sit and wait till August 27th. A little bit of time, but hey, glad everything went well. Thanks for doing this as always, and we look forward to talking to you real soon.
Love to be with you guys anytime. Y'all take care, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, that is Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, and yes, they will indeed start off their season August 27th against Hawaii. Not a bad way to start off the season.
That would be fun, man. Good grief. How do we get into? Can we get an angle on that?
Look, the way you look at me.
Get a seat.
You're the grad. Can you pull some strings?
It'd be nice.
Get us on that trip. I've never been.
Hey, we are the flagship, aren't we?
Yes.
Is that good for a seat? So we're going to talk to Kevin Ingram.
I don't know.
Some of these guys.
Let's start that now. All right, we'll come back. Continue the discussion. By the way, at the bottom of the hour, Jeff M. will pop in, and we'll talk about the sounds team that has been rolling here late. We've had a lot of fun here today at First Horizon Park. More DDC next. Back here on the DDC on this gorgeous Thursday. Hope everybody's having a good day so far. How do you not enjoy today?
It's nice.
Talk to Jeff M. By the way, I was reading an article on TMZ during the break, and you're like, why are you reading TMZ? Because it was about Mike Tyson. Did you see where he got in a fight?
No.
On a flight yesterday on JetBlue. Why is Mike Tyson flying JetBlue? I guess a drunk passenger was heckling him, which, again, I guess you would have to be drunk to do that. Like, why would you be heckling Mike Tyson? And Tyson just got up and just blooded up his face.
Guy never heard of Mike Tyson?
Well, apparently he had, because he was heckling him. So he knew he was. But again, why did Mike Tyson blow through all his money? Why is he flying? Nothing against JetBlue, but why is Mike Tyson getting on a JetBlue flight?
Hey, good deal is a good deal.
Okay. Yeah, but that's what happened. You know, I mean, I don't know. Where's his friends? Can he get somebody on a private jet?
I don't know.
So he doesn't have to worry about that? I guess it started off innocent. But then he was with a buddy, and they just kept, you know, they just kept going, and they would talk in his ear. And I, from when I was reading it, and I guess Mike Tyson was like, hey, can we, all right, let's cool the conversation. Like, I don't want to, no offense, I don't want to sit here and talk to you this whole flight. And that's, it just kind of escalated from there.
It's like one of my favorite stories that Brent Peterson tells is when he was playing in a charity hockey game with Hartford Whalers alumni, and Gordie Howe was playing. And Gordie Howe was like, I don't know, close to 60 years old at the time. But they were playing against like firemen and policemen and townspeople, you know, a friendly game.
Sure.
And there was a guy on the other team that was really apparently roughing some people
up. No way. Going a little bit too far?
Going a little too far.
In a friendly game?
And so Gordie Howe
kind of never happens.
Skated up to him and said, hey, buddy, you know, take it down a notch here. It's a charity game.
Cool it.
And then he kept going. And he was like, look, if you do that again, I'm going to have to do something about this.
Yeah.
He kept going. Gordie Howe dropped the gloves, man.
Blistered him. Just.
Come on, man. It's a charity game.
You used to do a segment. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy.
Why would you not listen to Gordie Howe?
Because there's like, always it's.
Why would you disrespect Mike Tyson on a flight when you can't go anywhere, man? You can't run.
No.
You can't outrun him.
No.
That you're on a plane, man. There's only you can't get away.
And he paid the price. There was photos. TMZ had the photos.
I'm sure the crowd was like, "Hey, man, he asked for it."
Even Mark Borowiecki looked at the photos and said, "Sucks to be you."
Okay.
Is that too soon?
Oh, goodness.
So, you know, something that we could add a little perspective to the conversation of, because we've had a couple of these questions down our text line. People have called in and asked, and we've discussed it too, like which one would get done first, because you're wondering, okay, is there a time crunch? Well, not necessarily with the Titans. I mean, he's under contract, but we also know if A.J. Brown and his camp wanted to make this really uncomfortable, they could. Right? And so they could speed up the process.
Yep.
Debo Samuel has apparently decided to speed up the process in San Francisco. The Philip Forsberg part, July 13th is when the free agency period begins in the NHL. Now, I know David Poyle doesn't want to wait until July 12th. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But if it gets to July 13th, if it gets to mid-July, which is, this is mid-April, so that is 3 months from now, okay? If it gets to that day, he does lose leverage, and he doesn't want to get to that day. He will lose a giant chip, right, for him, a giant piece that he's got right now, he currently holds in negotiations. He'll lose a year.
Of what he can offer.
In other words,
it would be
like be
thrown into the pool.
It would be
of
like when
else.
He was trying to get Matt Duchene here, right? Where he could only offer him the max. The max is seven years.
Right.
And we know David Poyle doesn't want to lose that because that is a big chip. So,
yeah.
And I know David Poyle doesn't want to wait 3 more months to get this deal done, but the reality is if this keeps going and the closer we get, we will have to start discussing, well, this deal, something's going to have to give because David Poyle does not want to lose a year in negotiations.
Okay. So let's look at the timeline between now and then. You've got this window of today and tomorrow before the frenzy starts. 5 games in the last, what am I thinking here? Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. 5 games in what, 7 days?
Before the season ends? Yeah, next Thursday is Arizona. That's when the season ends.
Friday.
Or next Friday.
Is that next Friday? Thursday, Colorado. Friday,
okay, next Friday.
Arizona.
So 8 days from now,
so
season
it's
ends.
5 games in 7 days. So I don't think you want Philip Forsberg worrying about negotiations during that time when you got to finish off the season the way you want to. So you have this, to me, today would be a day, maybe even into tomorrow a little bit, of where you could negotiate. I remember Pecorine, we were in Tampa, and they came to an agreement with Pecorine. And we found out, we were eating dinner in Tampa, and we're like, hey, Pecorine re-upped for that last 2-year contract. It was his birthday. You're right. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I think that's right. I didn't remember that part of it, but I think you're right now that you say that.
Didn't he do it twice? He did it twice on his birthday, did he not?
Then the season ends in Arizona on Friday, the regular season. And hopefully, it's not done until you have an X next to your name, you're not in. But presumably, you have a little bit of a break between the end of the season in Arizona and the start of the postseason. Maybe there's one last negotiation that could take place, if necessary, there before you start the postseason in either Colorado or Calgary. If it goes beyond that, I think David Poile told you the other day that he would probably wait for the playoffs to be over.
Which, that isn't going to surprise anybody.
Yeah, that you don't want him thinking about it at that point. So you have a few more windows to do it. They've been working on this for a long time. It would seem to me that it would just be a great psychological lift for both sides, the team and for Philip, to have it done. You know, but I've thought that for a long time. But
yeah, but that is a real factor. I mean, you know, if this continues to play out,
right? But you could still, from the time the season ends, you know, whether you lose after the first round, the second round, let's have the dream.
Oh, you're putting them in now. So now you've gotten there?
Well,
you're not tiptoeing anymore.
Well,
you're putting them in.
All right, well, if the season's over, then obviously you have April 28th until July 13th.
I just want to know if you're coming over here. They're in?
No, I'm just saying you've got to hope that you're in.
Okay.
I'm trying to plot this out.
I'm working on you. They're in.
You're working on me. I was a little stung there. I was hoping Peter Laviolette would drop the hammer there on Vegas
and
last
just
night.
Truly, yeah.
But you have from April 28th until July 13th to still offer him 8 years. If
of
that's
course.
Not enough time to come up
well,
with it, then...
I mean, that's one that's been in play for the whole time.
Yes. So somewhere in there, you make your best offer and go from there. So that doesn't worry me that much. I remember when Ryan Suter hit the market back in 2012, it was. They were still hopeful. But I was saying to myself, and of course, it was a different system back there. There was no limit one way or the other. But like once the guy hits the market, you're not liking your chances at that point. Although they did pull that off with Mikael Granlund last year at the last possible minute there. But
little
they
bit
didn't,
different, little
they
bit different
go
situation.
Eight, they didn't go 8 years.
Yeah,
they,
half of that.
They went five. Or no, they
four,
went four.
Four.
Right?
Yeah.
At $5 million per year. But I think they upped the ante at the last possible minute. So I'm not worried about the time. If it gets to July 13th, oh boy.
No, I understand. But
it gets all the way to that. Now, it might get close.
As time elapses, I'm just saying keep that in mind. Like,
yes.
We'll have to – if it gets to a certain point, we'll realize that it is becoming now a time crunch because you cannot lose that chip. You cannot if you're David Poile.
I agree.
It's a huge ship to
have. No, your negotiating window is up until that point, and then from there, that's it.
Yep.
But you really don't want it to get to that.
Taylor asked a really good question on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. In that charity game, did Gordie Howe get a goal and an assist as well?
That's a really good question. Let's ask Brent Peterson that. Next time I see him, we'll ask him.
Did
he get a Gordie Howe hat trick in the charity game?
Like, we know he completed a third. But did he finish with? Did he also get the goal and the assist? That's what we need to know.
And did he feed Brent Peterson for his assist? Did Brent score the goal on the assist from
Gordie
Howe?
Well done, Taylor. We'll come back. Jeff Hem, the voice of the Sounds. We'll talk about this team. We're at First Horizon Park. They've been playing really good baseball here of late. We'll do that next. Thank you, Sean. Speaking of the Preds, if you're looking for a place to hang Saturday night and watch their game down in Tampa against the Lightning, how about Headquarters Beercade? Drink specials, chance to win tickets. Supreds, Bud Light Watch Party, Headquarters Beer Cave, located at 114 2nd Avenue South, downtown. Remember, that is a puck drop at 6 p.m. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call. I'll have your pregame at 5 o'clock. Speaking of having your call, tonight, Jeff Hem, first pitch, 6:35. He's also got pregame. He is the voice of the Sounds, and he now joins us here at First Horizon Park. Jeff, how we doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing fantastic. You don't sound – I'm looking for you. I don't see you in the booth with us. You're
here. We're here in the press box.
You're here. We did shower today. I thought we cleaned up pretty nice.
Yeah, so did I. I showered too. I've even got deodorant on, and you guys are giving me the Derrick Henry stiff arm here.
So we thought we'd have a little fun with this. Jeff is like a booth over in his booth. You know, we just only one window was open, and we're just like, you know,
we could make eye contact, I guess, if we both
we could really stick our heads out of the
right,
window.
We could stick our heads out the window. We could look at each other as we talked
and do that.
Yep. I'm waving to you right now.
Okay. Yeah. I can't. I gotta get up. Let's see. Yeah. There's Jeff right there. Okay. Yeah. I see the hand. I'm talking to the hand.
We've made radio contact with Jeff Hem. So I was telling Willie during the break.
Technology.
That's right. I was telling him during the break that I've had no luck with my pitchers in fantasy baseball. Like, and this is every year with me. For whatever reason, I am a jinx to pitchers. Well, thank goodness we're not doing a AAA fantasy baseball team, because I'd probably draft Sounds pitchers, and that would be a bad thing. Because right now, although I don't know if anything could hurt this team, man, they're rolling, right? They're shutting everybody out. You can't score on this team. What's going on?
Yeah, this has been a really fun first 2.5 weeks. I mean, and it's not just the pitching. I mean, they went 17 for 17 in steals before somebody just got nabbed last night. I mean, you talk about starters and bullpen getting it done for the league best ERA. Offensively, there are some guys who are getting hot. So there's not like this one component of the team that is amazing and everything else is subpar. I mean, it's just a solid club across the board right now. But you're right, especially the pitching. And, you know, we've seen some good talent on the other side so far. I mean, the Sounds open with Durham. Tampa Bay always has a well-stocked farm system. Then we go to Gwinnett and a Braves affiliate, and we all know what Atlanta's done at the major league level in the last year. They've got a lot of talent at AAA, as they always do. Sounds had back-to-back shutouts to finish the weekend there. And then this Charlotte team came in having they were top five in the league. And again, 2 weeks in, I know, small sample size, insert that comment here. But 2 weeks in, they were top five in the league in runs and homers. And the Sounds have given up one run in the last two games to start this series. So you're right. It hasn't mattered who it's been on the mound. It hasn't really mattered who it's been at the plate facing the Sounds so far. Their pitchers have just been tremendous. It's been a lot of fun to watch. And now there's been the added wrinkle the last four games with the pitch clock enforcements, which has really sped up the in-between pitch non-activity. That's been a really unique component that we can talk about. But yeah, to your point, they're 10-4, and it's because it's a well-rounded ball club right now.
Let me guess, you like it, the players hate it. You talk to the players, do they hate it? What are their feelings on it?
The early consensus is it's too early to tell, and I really felt that they meant that. They weren't trying to just sit on the fence or not really say they love it or hate it. I had a catcher on my pregame yesterday, a pitcher the day before. I've talked with our manager, Rick Sweet, about it. And I think in general it is a little bit early to tell. But and for fans who don't realize, we had pitch clocks at this level the last several years. They were loosely enforced, and pitchers, if they felt like the clock was winding down and they needed another minute, they could just step off the rubber and the clock would reset. There are limitations on that right now. You can pick off twice to a base or just step off twice to a particular hitter with a man on. If you do it a third time, if you try a third pickoff throw with a guy at first and you don't get him out, excuse me, he gets the next base automatically, and if you try to step off a third time, it's basically a balk. So the pitcher doesn't have as much recourse on that, and it's gone from 20 seconds in between pitches down to 14 seconds with nobody on, and it's 19 seconds with men on. The early feedback is mostly positive, not a lot of guys saying that they hate it right away. The wrinkle does become, they feel, it sounds like they feel a little bit more of a difference and rushed when there are men on base, which makes sense. That's typically when a pitcher might want to slow the game down a little bit more, and you're dealing with more with men on base. But, man, I'll tell you, and Jeff Passan had an article on it the other day at ESPN.com, throughout the minors, we're four or five games into this. It's shaved, on average, about 20 minutes off the time of game. I mean, we had a 2:02 on Sunday in Gwinnett. We have not had a game go over 2 hours and 40 minutes in the, because there was a grace period to start the year. So literally the last five games, starting Friday when we were in Gwinnett, was when the enforcement began. So we've got a five-game sample size, which is why the guys are saying it's too early really to tell. And then they'll learn more as we go along. The batter can call time once in a sequence. So if he feels like he's being sped up, he doesn't have a lot of recourse. And the batter has to be ready at the 9-second mark of the clock, or it'll be a strike against him. So pitchers are getting the ball back from the catcher, and they are going. It has been, it's been noticeable. The only thing I wish were different would that is that there would have been more enforcement of the previous rules in the past couple of years. In other words, maybe that 20 seconds would have been enough had they just enforced that. Now they're really enforcing it, and it's down to 14 with nobody on. So it feels even more noticeable than maybe it would have been, or maybe this adjustment wasn't needed at all, because this is not the first year we've had pitch clocks.
2:02 for a professional baseball game. Major League Baseball, are you listening?
Yeah. And let me
and
just
I know
add
it's
this.
Not going to be 2:02, but look, if they could ever trim – like significant time off, it will do wonders.
20 minutes is
20
legit.
Minutes is legit.
Yep. And let me throw this in too. I should add this. So that game on Sunday in Gwinnett, a 2-hour and 2-minute game, that was a 3-0 ball game. So if someone say, well, yeah, maybe they're all just happening to be low scoring games. Well, our old friends in the Pacific Coast League out in Albuquerque and Reno and Salt Lake, where the ball just flies, they've had some 12-11 type games with plenty of scoring and actual action, and those are still in the 2.5 to 2:40 range. So it's not like we're getting this early sample of a bunch of 1-0 games and that's part of it. We're getting some higher scoring games. I mean, the Sounds had a 10-0 win on Saturday in Gwinnett, and that one I think was like 2:20, 2:25. So this is not replacing the fun parts. This is truly minimizing the sort of downtime in between pitches that I guess is over time adding up to a pretty significant amount.
Yeah, I remember Bud Selig saying that a lot. It's really the tempo rather than whether it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, 2 hours and 30 minutes. If the tempo is good, then everything else should take care of itself. So, Jeff, let's talk about another part of that. Jeff Hem is with us, voice of the Nashville Sounds. I notice when you watch a Vanderbilt baseball game, for example, and there's some other college teams doing it, you have the wristband now. And I know that's being used some. Is anybody at the AAA level using the wristband communication? Catcher signs the pitch to the pitcher?
Our guys, from what, and I asked Rick Sweet a few days ago, they weren't using it yet, but they were very much aware of it, and a couple of our guys are wanting to try it. And so I think if we have this same conversation maybe in a few weeks, there will be some exploration with it, because like you said, it's also happening at the big league level to a degree, and so naturally guys at AAA are saying, well, hey, we better try this, see if we like it, see if we hate it, get used to it, because if it's going to be up there, we want to be ready for it. That's the bottom line of guys on the field at AAA trying to be ready for what they might encounter at the major league level. So I have not seen our guys use it yet in a game the way Vanderbilt is and the way some major league teams are, but it's definitely it's coming is the impression that I get from it. And I think that also can be an added wrinkle that could cut down on some time. It becomes a whole other dynamic to this. That part of it is fascinating to me too, and how that's working.
Another thing, as baseball continues to try to do some self-examination on how to improve the product, I remember a few years ago they put in the runner at second base and we were all belly aching about it. Now we're getting more and more used to it. What about shifts? Do you think we'll see that at some point? Have they done anything like a modified shift or anything to try to have more balls, incentive to put balls in play?
Yeah, that's a great question. The answer is yes. At the AA level and below, you can no longer shift the way we think of shifting, you know, putting the second baseman in shallow right and moving everybody over to the right side. So at the AAA level, there are no limitations on shifting. It's business as usual. We're seeing it a ton. Three infielders on the left of second, three on the right. But MLB does want to get more data on that concept. So from AA down, you have to have two infielders on the left of second and two on the right. And I forget exactly how it's worded, but basically all four infielders have to be on the dirt. They can't be out in shallow right field as the second baseman trying, you know, the way they would against Big Poppy back in the day, or some, Joey Gallo or some of these guys put the second baseman in
way
shallow right.
There.
So they are, they are limiting that in a lot of areas in the minor leagues. We don't have that at AAA, but that is a data point that MLB is wanting to look at. So they are getting a sample size on that at some of the lower levels with banning essentially the shift, but not at our level.
As a left-handed hitter who hit a lot of grounders to second base, I would be in favor of the modified shift for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
and
then, we could probably do an hour on
me,
the whole,
and I still hit a lot of grounders to the second base.
I'm sure we could do an hour on the guy at second and extra innings rule. I've come to love it, especially at the AAA level, and I'm you know typically at more of a traditionalist, like let's not overhaul the game at the major league level. I think it adds drama. I think while there's a novelty to, hey, you see who went 16 innings last night? Like, there's not a lot of good things that happen in a 15-inning game, certainly at the AAA level, because you burn your pitching staff and you don't just have a wave of guys coming up from AA. But even at the major league level, and I think it adds drama. I think, you know, if you're flipping scores and you see a game goes to extras, you can, as a fan, know, oh, I got to get over to that game and see how this ends because – you know, both teams start with a guy at second base, and so immediately there's a run-scoring chance, whereas so many extra-inning games become like who can make the first error that brings in a run. I just think it adds more than it takes away. I've come to really like it at the AAA level, and I hope more people are starting to like it at the major league level because I don't think that's going to go away.
I'm in that category. I know, Darren, you can't believe this. I'm okay.
Who
with
are
that.
You?
Not in the playoffs, but I'm okay with it in the regular season.
Yeah. I agree with that. Keep it out of the playoffs, but I think it adds drama. If MLB's initiative is, hey, let's create action, what better are you going to do than immediately give the visiting team a run-scoring opportunity to start that 10th inning, and then there's strategy involved. Do you bunt? Do you not bunt? The home team gets a huge advantage because they know exactly what they need in the bottom half, so there's a home field component to it. I think there's, like I said, way more benefit to downside, and I thought it was strange at first when they put it at the major league level, and I've come to really like it.
Jeff will shower and shave next time. We really appreciate it. What time do you have pregame tonight?
Man, this is disappointing. I had a brand new cologne on today, and you're not even going to get to smell it. This is disappointing. 6:20, we'll get it cranked up tonight.
Keep up the good work, and we'll chat soon.
Good seeing you guys, and I'll wave you again down the hall here in about 30. Give me about 30 seconds, and I'll come see you.
We'll wave back.
Okay.
Jeff, Voice
bye.
Of the South, 6:20 pregame tonight. First pitch, 6:35 here at First Horizon Park. Let me talk to you about my friends at Cool Springs MD. You've heard me talk about them for years because they've been helping me for years, and they can help you. And I know they've already helped a lot of you. And maybe with the warmer temperatures here, hopefully to stay, you'd like to shed some unwanted pounds. Well, weight loss management's important to them, and they've got programs and products and people that can get you back on track and headed in the right direction. Rejuvenation, your appearance is important, and boy, is it challenging as we get older. Well, PRP, hair removal, Botox, is something they can discuss with you. And finally, hormone therapy. Did you have your levels checked? Do you know they dip as you get older? Well, they can discuss BHRT, testosterone, estrogen. They can get you feeling normal again, feeling right. Maybe you've been feeling off, and that can factor in. These are just some of the things they do under one roof out there in Cool Springs. It's a state-of-the-art facility at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you want to learn everything about them, you can just go to their website, coolspringsmd.com, or you can always pick up the phone and make an appointment or a consultation by dialing this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Well, we're going to hit the road here soon. Miguel Cabrera searching for hit 3,000. He's got $29.99. He came up. The Tigers have a day game against the Yankees, and he struck out.
He's 0 for 3.
0 for 3. So
Shane Montgomery
still
got his number.
Stuck at $29.99. I feel pretty good about this. I think he's going to get it.
You think he'll get it eventually?
I think he's going to get it this season.
Today?
I feel
good. No, it's top of the seventh.
So I think he's going to get it.
They're up 1-0. So if like if you went to that game, you're like, man, I got to be there.
He's not going to get it today.
No?
No, he's not. But he is going to get it. I'm here to tell you.
Okay, so
he's going to get it.
This would be the dilemma for the Tiger fan. You want to win the game, but do you sort of hope that the Tigers give up the lead and it's tied 1-1?
Just
so they have the
at
bottom
bat.
Of the ninth
another
and he gets in there again.
Sure.
Because that's probably what would happen.
Well, if you're at it, sure. We know that. That's for sure. Okay. We had a great conversation with Gary Parrish earlier in the show. Grizzlies and T-Wolves tonight at 6:30 on TNT. Game 3, series tied at 1. Let's go to our NBA desk. Elijah Campbell is standing by at the Hillside Medical Game Studios. What happens tonight?
Grizzlies take a 2-1 series lead and look impressive doing it.
Impressive double-digit win.
Yeah, okay. I'll go 10. I'll go flat 10.
We'll go 10.
Grizzlies win all by right. 10.
Flat 10. Okay, well, Grizzlies are favored by, I think, 2 when I looked earlier, by a bucket.
Take it. I think the Grizzlies have figured out how to score against the Timberwolves, and I just don't trust the Timberwolves defensively to get enough stops to win this game. Or okay. probably
What's
any
line?
Others in the series.
Why? When I think 2?
Why are you asking about a 10 points then?
Well,
I thought you were asking because of the line.
He said convincingly. And I was like, okay.
Okay, well, I thought you had motive to your madness, like you're starting to sneak in your little.
Well, do you think 2 is convincingly or 4?
No, the Lions 2. That tells me it's kind of a toss-up game. I'll take any kind of win if I'm the Grizzlies. Although it does seem like the road team has – I don't know if the road winning percentage has gone up at all in the last 5-10 years as there's been more parity. Philadelphia got a big road win last night. It just used to be, it seemed like, in good series, it was so hard for the road team to scratch out a win. Doesn't seem like that's quite the case. Chicago won in Milwaukee last night to get a split.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls.
That was a shocker.
I still don't believe they're going to win the series.
Billy Donovan. You don't believe in Billy?
No. Nope.
Billy D?
Mavericks, Jazz. I think Utah wins tonight. I think Denver wins game 3. I'm going to say they're gonna get the lead down to 2-1 after tonight.
Big game in Calgary tonight as well.
Big game in Calgary.
I almost died the other night. Did you hear the referee? Predators Flames. We got to get this clip. I was thinking we got to find the clip for Elliot. Because the referee gets on the microphone and says, Calgary!
Yes.
He said it.
No, I know.
And I was like, oh my gosh. I don't
because
I don't say
that.
I always
like,
say it,
nobody says Calgary.
I always say it jokingly just because
yes.
That's funny. I know that's not how you say it. But the referee in a real game.
He did.
He said it.
He did.
I forget his name. I was like, I gotta get that guy's name and tell Elliot.
Well, even Chris Mason yesterday said he says Calgary.
Yeah, I think he gets
kind
of annoyed at anybody that doesn't say it. Like, he doesn't know where that came from.
Well, Crispy says Calgary.
He was.
We've heard it for 24 years or whatever it's been.
But that's what he said. Crispy's from Ontario.
He did. All right, that will do it for our show tonight. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us to wrap up the week tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. We'll see you then.